they can record it.
I'm not going to be with you very long, but I do want to give greetings from Secretary of State Firestone. I'm Ron Levitt, Assistant Secretary of State, or as Randall calls me, the ASS in the department. It's an old joke, but I've been using it for the past 10 months, and I'll get a new one for next year. The Secretary and I are both extremely pleased that we've got a folk life council now. We think that this is going to be one of the more intriguing areas, the more educational and beneficial areas in the Department of State. I think you've got a great challenge ahead of you because you're really starting with, and Lee, you may correct me if I'm wrong, but you're starting with nothing. You're starting from square one, and you've got only one way to build is up. The people we've got selected for the council, we feel, are exceptional. I think it's a good cross-section of the state, and we're extremely pleased. I haven't met all of you, but I hope to within the next 24 hours anyway. I'm going to sit in for a little while, and I've got to get out. Unfortunately, as you know, the Secretary is in a cabinet meeting. He's going to try to get out at an appropriate moment and come over here and say hello. So if I walk out on you, it's not because I'm not interested in what you say. It's because I've got to get to another meeting.
Okay, Randall. Good afternoon. I've met some of you. I'm Phil Wernley, the new director of the Florida Folklife Program. And before I get started, I'd like to also introduce Randall Kelly, the Deputy Secretary of State, and let him say a few words to you.
I'll only say welcome. I think I've met most of you except for Mr. Foreman and Mr. Gose a long time ago. But I have a place on the program where I'm going to give you an overview of the Department of State, how it relates to this program, and basically what the role of the Folklife Council will be, or what we hope it will be, based on the legislation which was passed. And since I'll go into a lot of detail there, I won't make any further remarks now. Welcome.
I also will save my remarks for during the introduction of staff. First thing we'd like to do, just so everybody can become familiar with who's who, is the first item on the agenda essentially to introduce the council members. And what I would like you as council members to do is not just give us your name, but sort of let us know what it is that you know you do that sort of got lead to recommend and the secretary to decide to put you on the council. I know that each one of you have interests, special interests that relate to the folk program, and I think we'd all like to hear how you relate to the folk program and maybe some comments about what you might think on the surface of what you'd like to see to come out of the program. And why don't we start? I just have a list here, and they're not in alphabetical order. Mr. Foreman, Ronald Foreman, why don't you start?
All right. I'm Ronald Foreman. I've been in Florida for 10 years. Now I came here from Gainesville, from Illinois, and I direct the Afro-American Studies program at the university in Gainesville, and I am a member of the English faculty there. I am honored to have been chosen for membership on this council because of my belief that a state which intends to promote and encourage and honor the folk arts and folk life and the regional and historic accomplishments of its people certainly must be accorded a place of honor among all of the states which might do so but which do not. My special interest is in the culture of entertainment as it relates to folk peoples, particularly music, the dramatic and theatrical and entertaining arts, not as the folk consider them arts, but as those of us who appreciate and applaud them might come to do. And I'll be very happy to see the state of Florida continue to promote the encouragement and the dissemination of information about its very rich folk and cultural history throughout the state and involving all of the people who are properly a part of this history. And rather than to say what I would like to see the council do, I'm more than happy to say that I'll make whatever contribution I can to see that the council and the state are proud of its new folk educational and demonstration and celebration enterprise.
Thank you.
If we had him around when we were doing this.
That's right, he could set it up. The second member who we'll hear from is Miss Lillian Saunders, who is now a new neighbor of mine since I've moved to White Springs. And I'd like to hear from you a little bit about what you've been doing all these years with the Stephen Foster Center and everything.
I have been fortunate in being associated with the Stephen Foster Memorial since it became a project. And the idea was partly to feature the beautiful part of antebellum days in the South. And that way the museum building was built to look like a home. And the dioramas were built to represent ideas expressed in the music of Stephen Foster. And because he really wrote about American life and American people, and his music is so popular over the world that the legislature evidently felt that it would be a good project. Then to show the life in Florida, we began to have the Folk Festival and began with locating the different people in the state or the different nationalities in the state and invited them to come there and put on a program. And we feel that it has done a great deal to acquaint not only the Florida but the United States and some foreign countries with what Florida has to offer in folk life. And I'm delighted to be here and appreciate the opportunity to work with you people.
What Mrs. Lillian didn't tell you is she's one of the great cooks in Florida. Also, I think you ought to know that in the Department of State, when we talk about Mrs. Lillian, we are not talking about Plains, Georgia. We're talking about that.
Right.
30 miles from Georgia.
30 miles from Georgia. Okay, the next person is Alan Jabor.
Well, I can't add to Ron's eloquent statement about why it's worth our gathering together and trying to launch this program. I'll only say that it's a special pleasure for me as a harried, distant bureaucrat, you know, to be able a little bit through a program like this to touch not only a state of the union that's making an initiative of this sort, which I think can be not only an initiative of great value for Floridians, but a national model for the sort of program at the state level that every state deserves, but no state has yet received. But at the same time, for me, it's a special pleasure because it allows me to sniff home again, being a Floridian that wandered away. Everybody longs for home, but I suppose people who are involved in folklore have a special propensity for thinking of, you know, their native country and the areas that they grew up in and the traditions expressed through them and the importance of those things in shaping their lives and making them what they are. But for me, as a North Floridian who split between being a cracker and being the son of an Arab immigrant who came to this country, Florida is a complicated sort of experience, not to be summarized in any single trait. And my wife from Miami certainly will add to that thought, too. And the other thing that excited me about the program was the idea of bringing together, you know, and encouraging and nourishing the varied forms of expression in the state, north and south, you know, all parts of the state, all cultural groups, you know, and showing the bonds that link together, even in the midst of this terrific diversity, you know, that link them all together as Floridians. So that too attracted me, and I'm delighted to be with the council and to offer, you know, for what it's worth these days, a little bit of a federal perspective or a national perspective on options available, things that could be explored in order to develop a program of the greatest benefit to Florida. So.
Thank you, Alan. We haven't told Alan he's going to be a resident Washington lobbyist, too. We'll talk about that later. Next, we have Kathy. Or is it Catherine?
Well, I'm officially Catherine, but
okay. Well, Kathy's the group.
Kathy. I am real pleased to have been asked to be on the council, and I am particularly interested in the arts and crafts aspect. That's where I've been most active all my life. Started with the teaching background that made me interested in this, and I feel that I have more to gain than to give, but I'm really looking forward to working with all of you and doing whatever I can.
Very good, thank you. Miguel Gonzalez Pando.
I'm director of the Division of Latin Affairs at Florida International University, which is part of the state university system in Miami, although here in Tallahassee sometimes they forget about it. there are over a million Hispanics in Florida, and I don't think that the history of this state and the people of the state could be told without recognizing that fact, which I don't think that has been adequately recognized in the past. I interpret my appointment as an attempt to recognize and encourage the participation of Hispanics.
That's only part of it. The other is because you talk so beautifully.
No, it's because basically he wants to get used to my accent so he could get along in Little Havana. But that's his hidden agenda. And after lunch today, I recognize that there is a long way to go because I couldn't find any Cuban coffee in Tallahassee.
That's right.
So
he and I got together because I'm used to Cuban coffee in Tampa too. Can't find any.
So I'm really excited about working with you all in this program, and I'm very enthusiastic about it.
And then we also have Mr. William Goza.
Sharing somewhat the Spanish background scene. My name originally was Saragossa, but we've been far enough away from the old country that I don't have the delightful accent that my colleagues have. I'm a fifth-generation Floridian, and I suppose the main reason I was named to the board is so that there would be a deep cracker influence somewhere along the line. I'm impressed with the diversity of experience in the board. I feel that would be very good. I noticed my colleague Alan has mentioned his mixture of heritage in his background, and it calls to mind the fact that our first United States Senator from Florida was half Arab and half Jewish, and if you can get any more diverse elements than that, I don't know it. I'm a twice graduate of the University of Florida. I practiced law in Clearwater for 38 years and have more recently been identified with Madison, Florida, where my five generations came from. On the state level, I served on the old Florida Library and Historical Commission, and then more recently was a charter member and 7 years vice chairman of the Historic Tallahassee Preservation Board. Up to this point, my state appointments have been just serious enough to make me have to comply with the financial disclosure law, but not serious enough to warrant any pay. I'm a past president of the Florida Historical Society and a past president of the Florida Anthropological Society, and of course have a deep interest in our state's history and its culture. We have served in various capacities in other respects. I'm president of the Wentworth Foundation, which has administered scholarships for 50 or 60 students per year in the state of Florida. And more recently, I made the news this morning. I was told on the way in, my name was on the Tallahassee paper. I'm a new director of the Commonwealth Corporation, which is in bankruptcy, or was in, and is pulling out. So I hope that that experience will help somewhat with the status of the arts and culture in Florida. Maybe we can qualify under Chapter 10. At any rate, I'm delighted to be here and to be a part of this program, which I feel is exciting and challenging. As I say, we're spending 90% of our time in Madison, Florida now, and if you pass through there, and everyone does, we have more recently restored the old Wardlaw Smith House in Madison, which was in a state of decay for a number of years, and perhaps we can have the board to come over there to meet sometime, as we had the historic Tallahassee once in the prior restoration we did in Madison of the Dial House. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Since we're bearing all for everybody, I think it ought to behoove us to ask that Mr. Levitt and Mr. Kelly and Lee all give us a little bit of their background. So,
I was going to say a word about Bert Jones.
Okay, Bert, well, you go ahead and take care of Bert Jones.
We're one member shy today. Bert Jones called at the last minute and said he had a more pressing engagement and had a higher priority. And coming from anyone else, I would have been a little disgusted, but Bert Jones is a full-blooded Seminole who had a rodeo. And I suspect, Alan, that that would take a higher precedence in some callings than our own. Bert is, he is business manager of the Seminole Tribe. He's former director of education for the Seminole Tribe. He's studying to be a medicine man. And how he fits all that in, I don't know, but I think that Bert can give us a strong influence from that portion of Florida's background and present that will help us all as well. So Bert sends his regrets, and saddle sore or not, we'll be here the next time.
Lee, may I mention one thing I forgot to mention in connection with Miguel's statement, that I quite agree with his statement about the lack of acknowledgement of the Spanish influence and culture in Florida, and would wish to underline what he said by pointing out that it will be the year 2109 before Florida belonged to the United States as long as it belonged to Spain.
It's true. But while you were talking, Lee, why don't you, Lee Warner, give a little bit of background on yourself?
I'm an academic reject or retread or whatever. At least that's what I was accused of in South Florida last week. I have spent a number of years teaching at Florida State, and for a variety of reasons it came downtown from one end of Tallahassee to the other, which is a hell of a long journey when you stop and think about it. But I've been with the department now 5 years, first of all at the Tallahassee Preservation Board, and since January working with Secretary Firestone, Randall and Ron, in historic preservation and cultural programs for the Department of State. And I was sharing with Phil on the way out to the airport this morning, I honestly don't believe there's anything I have ever done which I feel is as exciting and valuable as working with this program. I think that we have the germ of something here that can do something really significant for all Floridians, working through both traditional education in the public schools, through adult education, and importantly, through Florida government, and help to point the way that government thinks about people, the kind of programs it puts together. So I look forward to it.
Ron, would you like to say a little about yourself so they know?
I've been Assistant Secretary of State for the past 10 months. When George asked me to come here, he said that I had the attributes that he wanted most in the second man of the department, and that's being his best friend. I've lived in the Miami area since infancy. My parents are originally from upstate New York. Graduate of the University of Miami in journalism. 4 years U.S. Navy as a naval journalist, and after service in Korea, traveled as an aide to an admiral 7 times around the world. It was one of the joys of being in the service. Came back, joined the United Press as a staff correspondent after 4 years at the University of Miami, and left after 4 years to form my own public relations firm in Coral Gables, which hopefully is still in existence, so when I get through with Tallahassee, I can go home and earn a living. I have written extensively and been published in a number of magazines, ranging from Sports Illustrated to Playboy. My avocation is painting, writing, photography, and study of history. I am very deep into historical things, and I really enjoy it.
Randall?
I'm also a fifth-generation Floridian, Madison County. Yes. And we'll have to compare our
right.
our tree, go through San Pedro and Hopewell Cemeteries again, pointing out which ones were the black sheep.
Right on.
I obviously a native Floridian, and educated in Florida schools, and I took a summer job out of college with the State Road Department during the Bryant administration, and
his wife was from Madison.
That's true. And it took, and I've been here ever since under I'm working on my fifth Secretary of State. I've worked in the governor's office and the treasurer's office. Most of that period was spent as chief cabinet aide to various Secretary of States, starting with Tom Adams Forward, for those of you that know the politics of that. But I had a real rare opportunity in January to go to work for George Firestone, and was very excited about that, about a changed role to oversee the cultural areas of the department, and I'll explain that in my overview of the department of how that relates to this program. But it's a change of hat for me from standard political and bureaucratic type of operations, and I'm getting a little culture now, and I'm going to enjoy working with all of you on this program.
Yes, thank you.
I hope to join you all later. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Now, a little bit about myself. Of course, I did say I'm Phil Warnley, the director. I have been with the department also for 5 years, and I'm proud to see that we've got a few Gators here because I also graduated from the University of Florida. Have both my degrees from there, BAs and MAs in American History, and a minor in historic preservation from the School of Architecture down there. I was a historian with the Historic American Building Survey for one summer in Fernandina Beach, and from that point I went directly with the Division of Archives here in Tallahassee and was a historic site specialist for 3 years up here, and moved from here to Tampa to become the director of the Tampa Preservation Board, which was a kind of a very similar experience to what I'm getting into now, because I was the first director of the board down there. And I had to start. I didn't even have any staff when I got there. We had some positions that had been authorized, but they weren't even to the point of being approved the day I started. Had no secretary, no furniture, no place to live, no nothing. And we, I think, have built a good program down there. I think this is a tremendous challenge. When I was called about taking the job, I started saying, well, why are you calling me? I'm not a folklorist. But I do think I bring some...
That's what they said, too.
That's right, I know. I did bring some administrative experience, I think, and an appreciation for the folk culture, particularly in the sense that my own background and my own interests academically have fallen within the realm of folk architecture. When I was with the Division of Archives, I've conducted surveys in Jefferson County, and Gainesville, and Jacksonville, in Polk County. I spent 3 months in Apalachicola doing a survey down there, and it seems like in almost every one of the communities that I worked in, I tended to run into mainly vernacular architecture and suddenly had to become what I thought was an expert in it because there wasn't anything written on the subject, and I sort of fell into doing a lot of research in it. So I do have a fascination, and I do hope to bring to the program some at least a viewpoint of dealing with folk architecture that probably does not exist in the staff currently. I do believe this is a challenge, this program, and I will get into that a little bit more. But I would like to give you an example of that because it was a hard decision to leave Tampa because I was very happy down there to come to this program. And very frankly, I left at the beginning of what we hoped would be a $25 million economic redevelopment of Ybor City, which we had put together and were moving down the road toward. But when I weighed everything and saw the future here, I decided that, they can do their economic development, and I'm going to go and see if we can't, you know, get a really fine statewide program off the ground. And that's why I'm here. I'm looking forward to working with all of you, and I think you'll hear a lot from me. Lee knows I'm not short to talk, and I'll also listen to people, but I think it's important to communicate as much as we can about, you know, what we want to see done. I'd like to also introduce and let them give you a little background, some of the staff members. We have Iris Green over here, who is my secretary at the program, and she can tell you a little bit about it because she knows more how long she's been there than I have.
7 years.
She's been with Stephen Foster for 7 years. And then we have Barbara Beauchamp, who I'd like to give a... Beecham. I keep wanting to call it Beauchamp. I'm sorry, Barbara. But if just have her give you a little background on her and what she's been doing over there.
Well, for 21 years I've worked at the Stephen Foster Center, and I'm very excited about being a part of the program because so many of us over there did not know whether we were going to be a part of the program or not when it all was shook around. I'm a fourth generation Floridian, and it's pronounced Beecham, although it's spelled B-E-A-U-C-H-A-M-P. I might tell Mr. Gozier that we're living on the same property, six generations out there now, that my great-grandfather homesteaded. So we can't get out of Hamilton County or Columbia County. And I came up through the ranks at the Stephen Foster Center. I've worked with our public relations department in programming. And I'd like to tell you, in case you don't know it, that Thelma Bolton has been very instrumental in the folk program at the center. And I'm sorry she couldn't be with us today. And I've worked very closely with Thelma and with Peggy and Mary with some of the folk programs that we've had in the past. I think that's about all I need to tell you now.
Thank you. Mary Bland, who is our artist in residence.
I've been with the program 5 years, and I came from Tallahassee to White Springs. I'll be going into more detail, but basically I'm a fiber artist with a real love for weaving, spinning, and natural dyeing. I've put a lot of emphasis on those projects into the program, and I've just been real happy in White Springs, and I'm very excited about the direction the program is going, and very excited to meet all of you, because I've been hearing so much about what's going to happen, and it seems like now we're getting off the ground. It's just fantastic. Welcome.
And Peggy Bolger.
Well, I'm the damn Yankee of the group. I'm originally from...
That's another ethnic group, you know.
Hi. I'm originally from upstate New York, and I did my graduate work in Kentucky and slowly was working my way south. And I've been in Florida now for 3 years. I came here actually almost 3 years to the day today on a grant from the Fine Arts Council of Florida. They had a grant for a year to hire a folklorist to do basically a survey of folk artists in the state. And it was kind of iffy whether it would turn into anything at all. And after that first year, we were very happy to have the legislature approve my job as part of the Stephen Foster staff. And during that time, I worked with Thelma Bolton and Barbara Beecham and Mary and tried to insinuate my program within the whole program. And in 3 years, we've done, I'll probably get into more of the history of what we've done, but in 3 years, I found a husband, I bought a home in White Springs, and I pretty much feel like a Floridian now. In 3 years, I've traveled all over the state, and I've grown to really love it. And basically, that's my background. I was called the folk arts coordinator for these 3 years.
I did neglect to say I was born in Tennessee, but I so I'm a Southerner. But I grew up in Orlando. I was, and my mother was born there, so I'm not. You know, I sort of came back with the family. My grandfather was in Citrus in the early days of Orlando, and that's a long heritage there, as many of you well know, of the citrus industry being a big part of Florida. We have one other person who sort of happened in, and she's going to get introduced too. Norma McMullen, who is with Governor Graham's staff, and we'd like to hear a little bit about you.
Okay, sure. I grew up in Miami and came up here to go to school 14 years ago, and much to my surprise, I'm still here. I work with the Policy Council staff in the Governor's office, and what I am here for today is to begin to get to know all of you and to learn about what you're doing so that in the future when it happens that you need some help from our office, there'll be someone there that Phil can contact or Lee can contact who will be familiar with what you're doing and interested in what you're doing. I have a master's in history from FSU, and knew Lee before he got his new treads. And I'm very happy to be in a position to be of assistance to you.
If I can just add a word, Norma. Lest we all get the idea this is a narrow Department of State program, it's important to remember that this program received the unanimous vote of both houses of the legislature. And we also had the firm, consistent, and effective interest of Governor Graham in putting the package together. So we appreciate you coming very much, Norman. We hope that we can stay in contact with you along the way. I'd like to make one other introduction in absentia, if I could, and that's Vicki Peterson. Vicki's the one who has really done yeoman service for the past 10 months in Tallahassee. Vicki is my secretary and has literally done more than almost any other individual, with the possible exception of three or four folks over in White Springs who've done more. Vicki had a little problem over the noon hour and is not going to be here this afternoon, but I hope she will stop in at Randall's tonight and that you'll all say hello to her when she comes in.
She's the one with the lovely voice to speak to me.
It's a lot better than Lee's. We'll move on to the item 4 on the agenda, which is Lee Warner, and he's going to discuss with you all basically the background of the Stephen Foster Center. Him being a historian, he can do a little history. And
Now, we want you to help us develop the agenda because we've gotten us this far, and now we're looking to you for where we are going in the future. And that is the second part of the thing I'm supposed to speak on, is what is the role of Folklife Council. And frankly, I don't have an awful lot to say about that. It's the reason I passed the bill around, because the bill is very specific and points out some things that you guys are supposed to do, and that's meet 6 times a year at least, and to advise the Secretary of State on these types of matters, and to encourage and stimulate throughout the state an interest in Florida's folk culture. And in sort of folksy terms, I kind of see the role of the Folklife Council, and perhaps this whole program is to sort of, we're the folks that have been assigned the task of putting together Florida's family album. It's our diary, the scrapbook of what's happened and what's happening and what should happen in Florida's relationship with its history and its citizens, and the contributions that various citizens and various citizens groups have made to Florida. And there's an awful lot of information already available that needs to go in our scrapbook. There's some things that we don't know that we need to go and study and learn, and then to publish this scrapbook, and so all the folks that aren't as interested as we are can at least have some appreciation. And my hope is that the end result of the kinds of important things we'll be doing will end up right in school curriculum, and right on the tips of tongues of every future fifth generation Floridian or damn Yankee or whatever. I think we're a pretty rich mixture of folks that come from all backgrounds, and this whole thing is very exciting to me, and I've rambled on enough. After a couple of drinks, I'll tell you more tonight. This is the role of the council. I mentioned earlier to Alan that it's my hope that we give some real serious consideration to our role in the initial stages, and that we establish a program that has such intellectual credibility that we become a model for the nation. That's a goal that I really would like to achieve. I'd like for all of you to consider this an academic and an intellectual program with folksy overtones, and we've got a lot of spoons in the pot that and a lot of issues that need to be considered, and the one area that we can't overlook, I guess, is the politics of this is that down the road, a couple of 3 years, we've got to be able to demonstrate that we've done something with that key word statewide, because that was the one promise that the Secretary made program-wise, that we would take this program, which has been a great local and regional in one aspect, although it had national recognition as an area program, but something that we can generate an interest in these areas statewide. And we've got a little Mason-Dixon line that runs through the middle of Florida, right through Orlando, and we've got to achieve something south of that line, which more relates to north of the line when you think of it in the old context. But we've got to show, to be very candid with you, we've got to show Dade County legislators and legislators from Key West and from St. Pete, Clearwater, and Pensacola alike, that these programs are meaningful to their local constituency. And the best way to do that is to branch out into some special projects that take into consideration special ethnic groups, work on the Hispanics and the Aboriginal, the Indian groups, and the just work on side projects and programs that can generate a full interest statewide. But I really can't tell you what your role is. I'm looking for guidance from you, as is the secretary, and any way we can support it, be supportive to you and the staff, this is where we're headed. Be glad to answer any questions about
my job,
pecking order, plans in the future, or you know any of these kind of. I can't help you in much of the real substance of the program, but I can deal with the bureaucracy issues that we have to deal with.
I have a bureaucratic issue of parking. Do they haul your car off from a 30-minute parking space?
They have been known to do that.
And do you have any recommendation in the future? Because I didn't in the slightest think the meeting would last less than 30 minutes, but it was the only place available, and that is a contingent worry.
Tell you what we'll do in the future. We've talked about this group and how and where we should meet in the future, and it costs just as much to fly you one place as the other. Frankly, because of the nature of the subject matter, I'd like to see us do some of our meetings in a retreat sort of way, something that will get us away from the microphone meeting room atmosphere and you know, where we can sit around in our old clothes and really get into some of the issues that we want to deal with. And we can do that at the center, and we can do it at various places. Maybe we can talk them into going to Madison one time or something. Show them some real folk history. But we'll next time try to make an accommodation about parking. And right now, if you have if your car is somewhere that's got a problem, you might slip out, hit the meter or something.
It's are there any hour spaces or anything like that? I just took the first one available, and there's only a 30-minute.
At lot E, I think it is, next to the Gray Building, there are, I think, 3 or 4 hour spaces, and they're visitor parking.
You think maybe I better check that then?
Where are you
I'm
now?
Right down by the, it would be northwest of here.
It was funny you should say that, because I was just asking Lee about the wiseness of taking a break anyway, and I think that, you know, in any meeting when you dragged on for an hour already, an hour and 15 minutes of talking, you kind of start losing yourself, so I think it'd be good for us to take about a 15 or 20 minute break, and if you need to move your car, go ahead and do it. And before we leave, we had one other person walk in who, you know, I'd like to introduce, is Rick Oppenheimer. And Rick, no one's ever told me you're is an information specialist, is that what you're, okay, he's an information specialist with the department.
I should have asked him.
We welcome you up here. Would you like to say anything? We introduced everybody before, so.
Continued luck. I'll try to make the public aware of what you're doing, and go to it. You have a pretty good job at it.
Rick is there will be, as Lee mentioned, another information specialist hired, and
right,
he is the only one. And most of our major public relations, public announcements and press releases will go through him and the other information specialists. So we're going to depend on him an awful lot for getting the good word out about the program. So 15-minute break, and let's be back.
My relatives came from the east, and they were
somebody had a cup out of mine. You want some of my coke?
No, I got some.
I'd like you all to meet two other members of the department who Randall talked about. You don't have to say everything that Randall said about them. Unless
I hope it sure was good.
They're captive audience because it's raining outside. I'm afraid they'll melt. You understand? But Barrett Wilkins, who's director of the Library Services for the state of Florida, and Ross Morell, who's acting director of the Division of Archives and deputy state historic preservation officer, which is his federal hat. Why don't you tell us what we can do to help you and you help us?
Exactly what you can do for us, I'm not sure yet. Maybe it would be helpful for me to tell you what we do and how we came to be. The Division of Archives and History and Records Management is sort of a child of emergency, as well as some very thoughtful planning on the part of state government. The initial effort that still is retained within the division is the ability to do emergency archaeology. Archaeology where an archaeological site is threatened through road construction, sewer treatment plant construction, anything that will alter a site to the detriment of our cultural resources. This was the initial thing that got the early effort started toward historic preservation that now exists within the division. This was 1965. During the legislative session of 1965, the state had an additional crisis they were trying to deal with, and that was the shipwreck resource in the state of Florida. It was being administered at that time by the trustees of the Internal Improvement Trust Fund through a relatively routine contract system, treating it much like they would phosphate mining or anything else. So there was a concerted effort during, well, prior to and during the session of 1965, and a relatively rudimentary antiquities law was passed that set up the Board of Florida Board of Archives. No?
Florida Antiquities.
Florida Board of Antiquities.
Yep.
Florida Board of Antiquities. We were all, everybody was a board back in those days. And the advisory body to the board was the Antiquities Commission. And the membership there was made up of the president of the Historical Society, Bill Goza, was on it. I was there as state archaeologist. The state librarian, Archie Dodd, was on it. And it was just a humongous body of people that were giving advice on these shipwrecks. Between 65 and 67, an additional effort was made to add to the antiquities legislation that would give protection for Florida's public records as well as broad range archival materials. And the shot in the arm there came from the then Secretary of State, Tom Adams, who was the keeper of the early territorial papers and the governor's papers that were stored then in an old vault down in the basement of the Capitol. So these three crisis-oriented things led to basically what we have now as Division of Archives, History, and Records Management, with records management added in 1969. So what we have are four bureaus within the division, one whose responsibility is for records management and archives, the Florida State Archives. Another, which is the Museum of Florida History. It's the Bureau of Historical Museums. It has responsibility not just for the museum in the basement of the R.A. Gray Building, but for giving technical assistance to cities, counties, organizations, for running satellite museums, for traveling exhibits, everything that has to do with the museum business for Florida. Then we have a Bureau of Publications, which was designed into our original statute so that there would be a built-in publication vehicle within the division so that we could publish the research efforts that were taking place. Because for years we had no way, short of our professional journals, of getting the archaeological and the historical research materials out that we were constantly producing. The Bureau of Historic Sites and Properties is responsible for the emergency archaeology, for the survey of archaeological sites, and they work very closely with a section within that bureau, which we call the Historic Preservation Section. And it's sort of a misnomer in that we set that section up specifically to address the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966. So our original definition of historic preservation followed the federal definition. But in actuality, the way we view historic preservation in the Bureau of Historic Sites and Properties is the total effort that takes place there. The archaeological concerns for the dry land sites, the archaeological and cultural resource management concerns for the underwater sites, this is shipwrecks, as well as prehistoric drowned sites. We administer within the Bureau the historic preservation pass-through grants from the Department of Interior. These are acquisition and development, survey and planning grants, and we have the authority, but haven't been funded, to administer the Florida historic preservation grants in aid. Additionally, we have a research and conservation laboratory facility, probably the finest in the country for dealing with historic artifacts, specifically iron artifacts from a seawater environment. We welcome you to come see us, see what we're up to. We're like, we hope everybody else is in state government. We work a 70-hour week, paid far too little. But we try to answer questions. We only have about a 3-week turnaround on response. I feel like many of you, certainly Bill and a few of you, know more about our operation than we know about your new operation. And we look forward to helping you. We've got people with a lot of kindred interests. We are the place in state government right now where you have the anthropologist on the payroll outside the university system. We are the place where you have the historians, the architectural historians, the historical architects, so we should have a lot in common.
Thank you. You want me to tell about the library? No? Okay. Well, the state library wasn't organized and it had any crisis situation as the archives and history and records management was. We first got a mention of the state library as an organization in 1845, and there was a couple of appropriations before the Civil War of $100 to $200, but it was put in the Secretary of State's office, and the Secretary of State was the ex officio state librarian. And we were housed in the closets of the Capitol for up until 1925, when the legislature decided to do something with all these books that were housed in all these closets. They couldn't figure out what to do with them, so they decided to pass a law really creating a state library with a state library board. And the first state librarian was appointed a former state legislator in 1927 named W.T. Cash. And from then on, we started moving up. And we first took over the old house wing, and we got first an anteroom in the house wing, then the old house chambers, and then we took a down step. We went downstairs to the basement of the Capitol, and then to the basement Supreme Court building, sub-basement Supreme Court building. And it was only in 1976 that we emerged from the temporary quarters in the Supreme Court building to the R.A. Gray building and find new space there. We have a collection of about 400,000 items, 250,000 books, 150,000 state and federal documents. We're organized into three bureaus, Bureau of Library Development, which is responsible for, it has a number of public library consultants that go out and work with your local public libraries and with state institution libraries and the correctional mental health and mental retardation facilities, trying to improve these library programs. They administer a series of federal and state grants. We have a state aid libraries law, which is currently funded about $3.5 million, and a state and federal grants, which we administer under the Library Research Construction Act, which currently run about $2.3 million. What we generally try to do is provide programs that will assist in working with economically disadvantaged, the rurally isolated, the bilingual clientele. Particularly, you may have seen the Rama Hispanica in Miami-Dade. We were instrumental in funding that particular program and buying Spanish language books for the Miami area. We have worked with migrants. We had a library out in the middle of Frostproof in an orange grove. We've done a good bit in trying to get the people that really you don't see visibly a lot, but that are very important members of the community. And we also answer technical questions from established libraries and try to get public libraries going where there are no public libraries. And believe it or not, there is one public library in the state that still doesn't have a telephone. Now, they figured that, and we've been working on them for a while, trying to, it's a weird public library. I'm not going to tell you where it is. Bill Goza might remember, but I'm not going to tell you. Bill, by the way, was a former member of the State Library Board before we came back under the Secretary of State in 1969 with the Reorganization of Government, Reorganization Act. We have a Bureau of Library Services, which is what you call or what you would think of as the regular library. It has the book collections. It has the circulation. We administer the Florida Library Information Network, which is a network of about 450 libraries in the state. It's an interlibrary loan network, and it's computer assisted. We have telecommunication network via Twix and Teletype.
We also have a administer the statewide documents depository program, which we have 24 libraries across the state, where we send a copy of every document that is published by the state of Florida. These are documents that have over 500 public 500 copies printed of them. These are the printed documents. We have the largest collection of Florida documents in the world here at the state. We also have a genealogy collection, which is the only circulating one in the state, and we also have a service to state government and state agencies. We're the only authorized library to provide library service to state government and state agencies, and we're gradually absorbing the other agency libraries that have grown up kind of ad hoc. A few years ago, we took over the education Department of Education's library, and then recently we have received the State Division of Planning Library, which is a fairly large collection of planning documents. We've also got a Florida collection, which is considered a very fine one in the state. It's has all the information published about Florida, and it's, I suspect, I've heard it's about second to the P.K. Young Library down at the University of Florida. We also have a Bureau of Library Support Services that helps these other two bureaus operate, and they keep propping us up, and they have our mail operation, and they have all the computers. We have a mini computer plus a number of terminals that work for us, so, and they catalog our books and acquire our materials. And then we have the Statewide Film Service, which is a purely interlibrary loan. We have about 2,000 films, and we it's an interlibrary loan program through the public libraries, but we make available these films on just practically any subject that you can think of. And that's generally what the State Library does.
Thank you, Beth. Thank
question, you. Question.
Yes, Bill.
Do you still have a program with the penal institutions?
Yes, we do. Correctional institutions. We fund the libraries in the correctional institutions. That's correct.
Rebecca Kushner, who's our director of the Division of Cultural Affairs, has just come in. Mm-hmm. Becky Ross and Barry have been telling us about archives and libraries and how they relate to the Department of State and what we can do together. Would you tell us about cultural affairs and how we get together?
All right. I'd like to first relate to you the fact that the Fine Arts Council meeting, which was held 2 weeks ago, voted to create a folklife panel. And so therefore, we are receptive to grant applications which are applicable in this area of funding. So that's a good recognition and a good direction, I think, that we are taking. The creation of this panel is certainly indicative of that. Cultural Affairs is among the seven divisions in the Department of State, and basically we are a funding agency directly related to the fine arts. We receive our budget from the state legislature, and last year we were fortunate enough to secure our $1.5 million, which was an additional appropriation the year before, and so therefore we are not hanging on a tenuous thread anymore. We are, as they say, locked in. And we also receive a dollar-to-dollar match from the NEA. We receive approximately $500,000, basically for administration, for dissemination of information and administration. All of our state monies go directly into grants. So in that respect, we are not only a service organization as the Division of Cultural Affairs, but also through the Fine Arts Council, a grants-giving agency. The division is the official contractual body which implements programs. We have 11 people on our staff, including myself, each of whom is directly in charge of their own programming components. Music, who is Dr. Mabel Sherman, her main background is in music. Her secondary program areas are literature, public media, and AIS, which I think that perhaps you, as a Folklife Council, would be particularly interested in, seeing that many of our artists who go into the schools are affiliated with the folk arts orientation, right, Peggy? Am I getting it right? We have weavers, we have potters, we have people who not only do programming in the fine arts, as parochial as that certain term might be, but also we have architecture in the schools, we have theater in the schools, we have other kinds of things which will acquaint children in the public schools with various mediums of the art form. We also have a person who is program director in theater and dance, who is Sharon Long. She also is in charge of our Southern Arts Federation programming, which includes dance touring program. And she also keeps the network of communication going between the community arts agencies, who I would suggest, as people in the field, so to speak, I think it's important that you make that liaison connection with your local arts agency. I think it would give a grassroots kind of communication, which is essential in a program such as this. Then we have Marsha Moore, who is our visual arts specialist, and as you have walked through these halls, perhaps you have seen the results of some of her expertise. She implemented the program which selected the works in the House of Representatives through a democratic process. In all Florida, this was a program which provided a marketplace for foreign artists, and through our Art in Public Places legislation, which passed last year after a three-year battle, we now will have artworks in all new public buildings, new state buildings, and some counties also have this particular percentage for artworks in county and in city buildings. So we are among 16 other states which have an Art in Public Places legislation, which will also, again, create a marketplace for Florida artists. I would like to see representational art forms in future purchases. I think that it's very appropriate not only to have paintings and mosaics, but also wall hangings, weavings, that kind of thing. So perhaps we would call upon you to serve in an advisory capacity in that way, and which can be very challenging. It can be very interesting to actually have a say in what your particular constituency would, that particular area would address. So Marsha basically is in charge of visual arts. That not only entails museum and individual artists, but also expansion arts, which deals with minority art programs. I'm happy to say, I'm very proud of it. In the United States, our expansion arts application to the National Endowment for the Arts ranked number one. Now, what I would like to see is that application being implemented in the state, which is the second prong to that dual system. It's good to have the program, it's good to have the advocacy, but you need the input, and you need the, again, the grassroots work to implement that very, very important program. For those of you who don't know what Expansion Arts is, and I'm sure all of you do, but let me just explain it briefly. Expansion Arts is a special funding category which is multidisciplinary. It is not particularly visual arts, but addresses the needs of, the particular needs of the minority community. This year, in addressing some of our minorities, we are translating our guide to programs into Spanish, and we are conducting workshops. Our grants workshops, which simply are instructional workshops on how to apply for funds through the Fine Arts Council, in those areas which have a heavy Hispanic community, we are facilitating those workshops in Spanish so that we can bring in those people who might not otherwise have
the... Stolen from the gallery Monday. I need to talk with you and find out what I can do about this. Well, I'm in a state of shock. I had a show scheduled for Miami to open Friday. We sent out 1,000 invitations, and I canceled everything frantically. So I'm hoping that things will turn up. I don't know. We'll see what goes with that.
Penny underground.
I know. Also in December, we started this. It was last year, was the first year, Barbara? The Christmas program? Okay. We started the Christmas Crafts program, and what we've done, we featured the work of the Suwannee River Crafts Guild members. They do all kinds of Christmas ornaments and things relating to Christmas, their dolls, their quilts, baskets, Christmas ornaments. We get a huge tree, and we decorate it all with handcrafted things, and we have just all kinds of sort of homespun goodies displayed everywhere in the building, and everything is for sale. And during the 3 weeks of the show, I offer one-day mini workshops. Like I work within the mediums that I mentioned, the chair caning, the basketry, quilting, but it's all relating to a Christmas theme. We go into a lot of Christmas decorations, things of that nature. That really kind of covers real basically what I've been doing. I'm working right now in Madison. I've got a 6 week basketry program going in the evenings. I've worked at the senior center there. I'm restarting my fall program with another group in Mayo. I hope to get a group started in White Springs. I've kind of been hanging loose till Phil came so I could get with him and find out what direction things should really go in. Fall is busy for me because that's when my major conferences are. I've just gotten back from the American Crafts Council Southeastern Regional Conference at Aramont, which was very exciting. The whole focus was on basketry, and I've come back very enthused and ready to get back out with Red Bucks. and I'm going to the Florida Craftsman Conference this weekend in Miami, which is the major conference for Florida crafts. And after that, I'll be into planning the Christmas show and going into fall and winter programming with community classes. Are there any questions or ideas about direction or just thoughts or comments?
I think a lot of us have a lot of thoughts.
It's a live group.
Yeah.
Say something.
I can appreciate that. Now it's my turn. I'm waiting all day. I've been waiting for, what, 3 months, Lee? I had to get that in. I have quite a few things I'd like to cover. One of the first things that I'm really not sure that you all, or if you all are aware of the significant change that has been made here and the significant challenge that has been placed before us. I have to admire Lee and the Secretary in pulling off something that is done very rarely in state government, and that is to probably increase the efficiency of governmental operations, we hope, 200-300%. Without hardly an additional dime of cost to the state, people of the state of Florida, or without having to create additional staff positions. And how this was done was they split the program up at Stephen Foster, gave the program the operations of the center to the Department of Natural Resources, gave them 17 people out of the 30 that were at Stephen Foster, and said, you clean up the grounds and paint the grounds, keep it up and keep it open, and use your money to pay for that. And whereas up until this point, the Folk Life program essentially had mainly three people, Mary and Peggy and Barbara, with some additional grants people. But it's a very small, essentially small program that had to share administrative costs and everything with running a facility. What happened was, with the establishment of the Folk Life program, we suddenly have 12 professional people that are directly involved with nothing but folk life. And I think that's a very significant size for a staff. The Division of Archives and History in the Historic Preservation section for the state of Florida does not have that big a staff. So I think we have a tremendous staff opportunity to provide a lot of services to the people of the state of Florida. As you have heard several times so far today, the Secretary's main objective, and the thing that has been placed upon me and to understand, is that this program has to reach the people of the state, that it has too long been concentrated in one small area, that to be a legitimate state-supported program, it has to benefit the people of the state of Florida. And it was very coincidental that I should wind up coming here, because for a long time, I held a very similar opinion about the historic preservation program in the state, and won't get into it. But was not thoroughly convinced that it was happening in the preservation programs. And this is all involved with the boards and the fact that some communities get more services than others, and not everybody in the state gets the same equal type of opportunity to appreciate historic preservation. I think the same thing has existed in folk life, and now we have before us a chance to let the people who are in Miami or in Key West or Pensacola or Jacksonville to begin to appreciate and to benefit from essentially technical assistance and support of a state professional staff that can be made available to them, essentially which they pay for. And I think that's the challenge that's before us. And the thing that I personally am looking forward from the council is to have you people essentially provide us with two things. Number one is to provide us with the with your thoughts and comments and suggestions on where the needs are in folk life in Florida. What do you think the program ought to do as far as services, as far as new programming, as far as projects and exhibits? And secondly, for you to be our contact people. We have not got someone in West Florida, but other than that, we have a pretty good, geographical representation. And I hope that you will be our listening aides in the local communities to advise us of what the people want in your communities and in your areas, or for getting the communities with your own ethnic interests, which I think are important. We're going to be looking to that because we can't do it all in White Springs. And I think we've learned this about people being in Tallahassee. You can't do it all in Tallahassee. I think that the program is going to have to be an outreach program. The center, at the same time, has got a lot of things that it can offer to people in the form of performances and the form of projects and programs that can continue to go on there that could be done there a lot easier than trying to take them on the road or try to go into a community and set up a festival on our own, particularly when there's a good 100 or more festivals going on in the state right now that could be assisted rather than have us go in and start a new festival in that community. So we do have a center program that I think ought to be, as Barbara mentioned, looked at again and maybe improved, but I don't think that we're looking at really significantly altering the basic concept of what's been going on there, but other than the fact that we need to provide the outreach and the services to other parts of the state. I think that there's a lot of things that you as contact people can do, and I hope that you will work with us and let us know, if you need something, if somebody in your own community has got a particular idea or thought about a project that ought to be undertaken, we're going to be looking to that. Another thing that Lee has, I think, mentioned to you is the fact that we do have a challenge before us as far as funding. That we have been given salaries, and that's it. But you can't run a program with salaries when you can't pay the person to go on the road and travel. And our responsibility, I would say, shortly after June 30th, is going to be in a position to have at least funds or know that we're going to have funds coming in that will pay for the travel, pay for the expenses of the program. And to that end, we are now beginning to develop grants and various types of applications for grant funds that we intend to use to supplement the programs. This was essentially the approach I used in Tampa, and we were able to, in 1 year, almost achieve half again as much money in our program as we had in state and local dollars coming in. And in addition, and this is one thing that has not really been thoroughly talked about, but I firmly believe in using technical assistance for other people. We were in Tampa, and I hope that we will do this up here. We've been instrumental in helping other people secure grants. Not necessarily money that we normally re-granted ourselves, but for instance, this year, the Tampa Bay area was in for 30% of the entire historic preservation grants and aid in the whole state of Florida. And the reason, very frankly, was that we prepared every one of those applications. And other people in the other cities and states didn't have anybody to do that for them. And so, therefore, they didn't know where to go for funds. And I have a suspicion, which, I'm not that familiar with the whole problem, but I would suspect that people involved in folk arts and folk crafts can't be expected to be sophisticated enough to find out where to go and get funds to support their activities. And that's where we, as professionals, have to be there to service them, to say, you go do your folk arts and we'll take care of supporting you or getting the money that's needed to keep you going or keep your program going. And that's what we're there for. And that's the direction that I see us taking. And I think it's an important one. We did provide you all with a summary and I would like you to look them over at some point if you haven't already and get back to us a summary of some of the current proposed and some of the current grants that we have. These are totally a product of basically Peggy and I, and I'll let Peggy discuss these in a few minutes. These are basically just some brainstorming that she and I did, mainly because we have some very quick, hurry deadlines coming up on grants, and we were pretty much in a position of having to get some grants in so that we wouldn't miss out on a whole year's worth of funding. Some of these programs have got deadlines that are a little bit later on. If you have some ideas or particular suggestions about other types of grants that might fit in with these programs, or knowledge, or can give us some assistance with some other programs to look at, please let us know, whether it's today or whether it's in the next week or two. But I do hope you will take a look at that. And I'm going to let Peggy, in a few minutes, discuss, the little more details about the grants. Some of the areas that I just wanted to mention to you all that I think are some issues that I have been able to identify myself as far as where some of the ethnic problems and some of the folk problems that exist are things that need to be studied and appreciated. Of course, I'm coming from Tampa, and Miguel and I discussed kind of extensively at lunch with Alan and Peggy about the Latin community in the state of Florida. And again, as we've discussed earlier, Florida has got a long tradition of Latin culture, and it doesn't go back just to St. Augustine. It goes back to settlements in Tampa Bay area in the 16th century, in settlements in the Pensacola area. There's a lot of Spanish culture and activity that has gone on in the state for centuries. And then we had another sort of interesting thing happen with the cigar industry in the late 19th century. We had another large population of Latin people that moved into the Tampa Bay area. And within that Latin community, there survives a tremendous amount of folk culture, both even down to voodoo, where, in Ybor City, there is literally a voodoo shop that sells, potions and fast luck candles right next to statues of the Mother Mary, and this is something that's been integrated into their culture for years, and it's something that, the people leaving there are grocery bags full of stuff, and it's something that, that's a folk item that exists in the community that very few people are aware of. There's dancing, there's music, there's food, there's a cigar industry, which has been one of the biggest industries in Tampa, has a dying tradition that needs to be worked with. I in Tampa had begun discussions with one of the technical schools. They had begun discussing with us the possibility of setting up a technical school program to train young people to do cigar rolling. This might be one method that we might want to get involved in to try to encourage that type of thing to happen. It's a possibility. It's an idea. Those are the kind of things that I think should be looked at. The Black community, of course, has got a tremendous amount of heritage in the state. Some heritage that goes back to the pre-Civil War days. There's some Black culture that exists in the Pensacola area that we have some friends at the Pensacola Board who know a lot more about that than we do. But there are some very significant cultural things that have taken place in among some of the Black communities that I think ought to be looked at and studied. I know when I was working in Jefferson County, I came across a Black community that something I had never really encountered very much, and that was the pallbearer societies. And, in the general traditions, the whole social, context in which the Black community lives, and something I've never been a Black specialist, so I can't even talk thoroughly about them. But I think it's that kind of thing that ought to be looked at and identified. We have, of course, the Greek community in Tarpon Springs. Again, it has a lot of culture and right now is beginning to reexamine in its own self about how and what directions it can take to try to hang on to some of the culture that's beginning to lose. Another one that I have thought about recently that tends to get escaped by many people, and that is that there's a Minorcan community in St. Augustine. And it's really funny because I was working under and had as a professor Dr. Michael Gannon from the University of Florida. And I remember him talking about the fact that many people were not aware, and probably the oldest cultural group that existed in the state of Florida were the Minorcans, because they were one of the cultural groups that went to St. Augustine in the Spanish period, did not leave St. Augustine during the English settlement period, and were there through the whole period of time. And so here you have the Minorcans, and the Minorcan descendants are still in St. Augustine. And there are certain items in their culture that exist that need to be documented and looked at. And, of course, we have the Seminole Indian groups, again, which has not been, I don't think, appreciated enough by people in Florida. I was talking to Peggy on the way over that, you know, there's all these Boy Scout groups that do Indian things. And the YMCA has Indian guides. And everywhere you turn around, you look at pictures. In fact, my father-in-law was an Indian guide chief at one time, and I've seen pictures of him in his Western Indian outfit, you know. And I got to thinking that maybe we ought to contact the YMCA or contact the Boy Scouts and begin working with them on some projects to try to get them to forget about the Western Indians and start studying the Seminole Indians in Florida. If they're going to, you know, if they're going to study this type of thing, well, let them study something a little more close to home.
Question right here, could I ask at this point?
Sure.
Did FSU ever do anything more? I know earlier they were working on a project with the Seminole Indians because of their involvement with the use of the name Seminole, and there was some conflict for a while, but they were trying to work out a Seminole program with one of the vice presidents.
I don't think, Lee.
No, as a matter of fact, Bill, my impression is there are no Creeks or Seminoles going to FSU now.
They had a program for a while that they were trying to initiate because I talked to Lama about it, and I just wondered if it had died a natural death.
I think it died, regardless of the kind of death. I don't know. Most
McClellan, Dr. McClellan, yeah, was in charge of that.
He's been gone so long.
Well, I expect it left with him.
The anthropologists up there tended to be more involved with the Creeks.
Mm-hmm. Which are over in the West Florida.
Anyway, my impression is the Seminole thing is just...
The Doris, wherever it now stands, the Doris Duke Project did get involved in Seminole interviewing for oral history purposes at the University of Florida. Mm-hmm. I think they might have run afoul of them here and there. You may know more about that than I do. Anyway, there has been involvement at the University of Florida in oral
I didn't tell you that was my directing professor. That was my directing professor, Sam Proctor, who was head of that program, who still is, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. University of South Florida under Dr. Charles
Arnotta has done some work. Another area that I think ought to be looked at is this whole question of festivals and how we can work with local communities in developing festival programs. One of the things that I believe we could get involved in is to go into communities with certain selected festivals at the beginning and assist these festivals using our professional staff and knowledge of how to locate and what really constitute a traditional folk artist as opposed to a professional craftsperson, which we can go on and on from what I've learned from Peggy in the last few days about what really is folk art and what isn't. And it sounds like preservation in all of our terminology. But at any rate, we could go in and begin to locate people for them and possibly under the auspices of the program, help them to set up small segments of their festivals that deal with the truly traditional folk art that exists within their own communities. And again, these people in the local areas may not know how to do that. And, you know, and this was one of the reasons that Lee had established a section dealing with the educational and outreach program. And I envision that the person that we are going to be looking for in that other arts administrator position is to essentially have the experience in setting up festivals and know how to do it so that when a festival needs a little bit of assistance in finding folk artists or whatever, they'll be ready and they can go down there and have the kind of credentials that are necessary to give them the assistance that they need. I think that'll go a long way toward, you know, adding our visibility on the statewide basis and as well providing a service that probably is needed. Very close to that, a very interesting development that's happened in Florida that many of you all may or may not be aware of has been that there has been every time I turn around, there's another cracker farm being built. Every time you turn around, almost every county now has got a log cabin and a farmstead, and they go out and they have weaving on Saturday afternoon. And, you know, it all started here, I think, in Tallahassee with the Junior Museum, and suddenly everybody thought it was a great idea, and everybody's got farm villages, including the Florida State Fair, which I was involved in helping get started this last year with Doyle Carlton. And all those groups are, again, looking for folk ways and folk traditions to be able to present during special weekends and things. And I think, again, we can provide just technical assistance and expertise to help them develop good quality programs. And, you know, and being careful not to go in and say, we're going to take over, but to come in and say, we're willing to come in and help you and provide you the assistance that's needed. I think this is, you know, the type of direction that at least one of them that we possibly can go in. You know, I can go on and on with other ideas. These are just some, you know, some brainstorming thoughts about the types of directions that I at least perceive that we can go. There's probably 100 million other kinds that I hope that you all will begin to think about and suggest to us, and we can work on those together. I think the funding is going to be a challenge, but I feel that we're going to be able to do the grants pretty successfully. I also see that there will be a need to develop, and the Secretary has suggested this to us too, that there be an attempt to do some corporation fundraising to try to develop the resources in the business community and the corporations. And while I haven't had a tremendous lot of experience in that, in the last 2 years in Tampa, we've been very deeply involved in economic development as it relates to preservation, and I have begun making some corporate contacts that I think that we can begin to work with. I think one of the biggest ones I was very fortunate to begin, well, I worked on the board with and finally developed into a close personal friendship with Harris Mullen, who's president of Florida Trend Publications. And he's the man that publishes the magazine about all the corporations in the state. And I told Harris when I came up here I'd be calling on him a lot to try to get some resources and find some contacts with the corporations that we can begin working with to try to get some, you know, a few donations. I think it's a tremendous thing. Again, I think the council can help us with that too. There may be people you know of or organizations or corporations that you know that might be looking for a project or a special project or something that no one has thought about that might have a certain type of business that relates to some of the folk traditions or rural traditions that might exist in the state, that if they were given an idea, might decide to run with it. You know, I'm thinking of some of the forest companies and maybe some of the mining companies that have been getting very involved in the state lately. And some of them are very frankly looking for good PR. And it might be that we can begin working on some of them to get them to help us out. And I think that there's no better publicity than a real good folky, you know, earthy type tradition that they can, you know, portray through their corporate support. And Lee was right about the staff there. Having a good staff was one of the things that attracted me to the program. Having enough assistants and administrative people that will help to free us up to do the kind of fundraising and program development that's necessary. And I think you'll find that my main role is going to be to try to do the fundraising, do the contacts, do the selling of the program, and lead the professional work, the professionals that are there, and lead the grant administration, which Avis the other day was asking me, our fiscal assistant, what am I going to do now that we don't have to process all of our fiscal? And I said, by the time we start bringing all those federal grants and you start duplication of accounting, and anybody that has had a federal grant knows how you have to keep triple and double records on everything you do, I said, you'll be plenty busy. So, you know, we're going to have, and I come off of a program having to administer $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 in grants, and we had one secretary to do all of our personnel accounting and secretarial work for a staff of 9 people. So I'm really coming into a situation where I think we can do a lot more with the resources that we have. Like I said, I'll talk forever, but I wanted to give you all some till Lee shuts me up. I wanted to give you some of my thoughts and ideas about potential directions, because I don't think anybody at this point can say where we're going to go. That's so, what we want you to do.
Let me just add one thing. The Secretary is committed to corporate fundraising, and once the Council identifies a priority list of projects, the Secretary will take that on as a personal commitment. He's raised tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars for specific projects in cultural areas in the last several years, and Rick can help fill us in on the kind of details, but he knocked down McDonald's hamburgers for $95,000 earlier this year, and that's the kind of thing we're talking about. We have got to get not only grant support, that's right, we have got to get that kind of corporate support for this program, and I think we can do it. That's right. That's where we're going. Those are the trees we're trying to shake, and we will have his personal involvement when we identify some priorities on the way.
I'm going to give we were trying to break up about, you know, pretty soon here, and I'm going to give Peggy just about 5 minutes to run through quickly just a summary of the grants that we are working on, and we'd like to hear any comments that you all have.
Unfortunately, it's kind of like putting the cart before the horse, because a lot of grant deadlines were coming up this October and November, and although Phil was still down in Tampa, he called me up and said, hey, we've got to get grants for this year because we do need money to do our programs with. So I said, okay. So without your input, we kind of brainstormed a little, and the staff brainstormed a little. You've got two handouts. One is current grant proposals, and one is current grants. I'm trained as a folklorist and not as a grant specialist, so it's been kind of a very difficult year for me because I spent a lot of my time developing grant proposals. Three grants that are funded, I just wanted to touch base with you real quick. These are things that we're currently involved with. The Florida Folklife Program grant is funded by the National Endowment for the Arts, and we have almost $20,000 from the National Endowment for the Arts Folk Arts Program to produce five slide tape programs on Florida folklife and different traditions around the state. This enables us basically to do a lot of traveling and a lot of field work and to increase our archival documentation, at the same time producing something that we've got that's visible and we can give to people. And that's our major grant right now, and two of our programs are currently completed, and I'm working on the last three now, and try to in between writing grants. The Florida Folklife Area grant, we have a grant from the Fine Arts Council to bring folk artists from the Tampa Bay area up to the Folk Festival this year. This increases our statewide outreach. As you've been hearing all along, we've got to increase our statewide outreach. And the Folk Arts Conference, this year, you'll all be hearing from me if you haven't already. A lot of you have already heard from me that I would like you to speak at the Folk Arts Conference this year. I'm going to combine my two things here so that I get it over with. The Folk Arts Conference is going to be pretty much a major academic arm of our program, in which we bring in professionals and academic people who are involved in folklife programming, to discuss some of the things that we're discussing right here. And the council, of course, will be a major part of this conference, because I feel that this year, with the creation of the council, you are instrumental in getting our story out and being able to work cooperatively with the different agencies within the Department of State. This is the thrust of the conference this year, is to explore ways in which we can work with archives, ways which we can work with libraries. Ross Morrell and Barrett Wilkins will be on panels. We're going to bring in people from the Department of Parks and Recreation. We're going to bring in people from the National Park Service, and people who can really brainstorm with us on a larger scale what the folklife program should be doing, what the needs are in the state. We usually have about 150 conferees, and this year, one of the main reasons we're holding the conference in Tallahassee instead of in White Springs is to increase the participation of state agencies. And since everybody's over here anyway, we figured we'll come to them, and we'll be able to really have some meaningful participation and perhaps come out with some very clear-cut ideas from the conference on some of the things that we can go into. The current grant proposals, these are just preliminary proposals which we had to develop and get into the different funding agencies to meet their deadlines. Of course, nobody knows if any of these will be funded or not. There are several other granting agencies, federal, state, and, as we said, corporate, where we would like to approach people with other projects that you all as council members may be able to work on these projects with us, developing, for instance, I was talking to Dr. Pondo about doing a cooperative program with FIU to do a Hispanic heritage program, perhaps approaching the ethnic studies program of HEW with something like that. Dr. Foreman, I'm sure you have some ideas. All of you would have ideas on some of the needs of your own particular areas and your own constituents and where you come from as a council member. And as a staff, I would feel that we would be glad to work with the ideas that you have. It's some things that we should be developing in our grant proposals. I just wanted to tie it up really quick.